COP30 continued in Brazil this week with delegates from more than 190 countries meeting for the climate conference that will run until the 21st of November. This week, a new theme was added to the official agenda for the first time: information integrity, and 12 nations signed a declaration about combating climate disinformation. Chris Cooper is the co-founder of Research and Action, which is a member of the global coalition Climate Action Against Disinformation. And Chris joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, what's the significance of information integrity being added to the COP30 agenda this week?
It's very significant. Climate disinformation has been a problem that has been undermining policy and progress on climate change for decades. And this is the first time it's made it onto the COP agenda. And it's had those countries sign up to it, which is a shared set of agreements around or commitments to address disinformation and promote accurate evidence-based information on climate. And it's the first time it's been recognized at this level with agreement between countries. So it's very significant.
Is there an agreed definition of climate disinformation? I suppose, what's the dividing line between disagreement about policy and disinformation?
Well, it's all backed by the science, right? And so there are creative or disingenuous interpretations of that science, but the consensus is clear. And so really, we're talking about anything that's intentionally seeking to shape policy or attitudes that is misaligned with the science is disinformation.
Can you give us an example of a real-world impact of climate change disinformation?
Yeah, well, we've seen it this week and recently through the Senate hearing on climate integrity information that's happening here in Australia at the moment, where there's been submissions and witness testimony around the coordinated efforts to produce independent analysis or reports or greenwashing and astroturfing, a whole suite of tactics that are either seeking to undermine trust in renewable energy projects or undermine the ambition that is needed to reduce emissions across the board.
You mentioned the Senate Select Committee on Information Integrity on Climate Change, which held hearings in Australia this week. I understand that you were involved in a submission to that inquiry from an organisation listed, a little confusingly, as Climate Integrity. What are the examples of climate disinformation you give in that submission?
So Climate Integrity is an organisation that I am on the expert panel of, and Climate Integrity is focused on particularly corporate accountability around their commitments to net zero. And so that submission was focused on a particularly pernicious form of disinformation, which we call data washing. And that's where we've seen fossil fuel companies contract or engage some of the big consultancies to produce these reports, which use flawed modeling or really sort of like dodgy abstractions of the science in order to push the agenda of a fossil fuel company. So we had three case studies, and the main one was looking at the way in which Australian Energy Producers, which is the sort of peak lobby group for the gas industry, they employed EY, the consultancy, to produce a report in the lead up to the government's policy decision around the future gas strategy. And that report was embarrassing for EY, really. It used dodgy modeling. It made up different pathways that it used to sort of shift around the averages in the data in order to make the case for gas being needed and increasing gas needs into the future, which is counter to both the science as well as what a lot of those net zero pathways actually say if you dig into the report.
It's one of the problems with the whole debate about disinformation and information integrity, the difficulty of distinguishing in communications what is a dodgy statistic versus not one. Like, how is it possible, say, for our listeners now to know that the modelling that you've just referred to as dodgy, whether that's actually why and how it's dodgy in the way you say it is?
Yeah, I mean, trust in information is, you know, a critical challenge across the board, really, not just in climate, but we have established trusted credible institutions like the IPCC, like the International Energy Agency, who produce this modeling based on the consensus with really broad participation from a range of different scientists to inform that. It's robust, it's rigorous, it's evidence-based. And so for us, when we see a report or some communications or an ad that claims something that is counter to those institutions, that's a red flag. And we've seen in the Senate hearings, you know, this claim that disagreement around some of this modeling or the data is either a matter of freedom of speech or is just, you know, matters of opinion and up for debate. But the science isn't up for debate. The science is very clear. It's always been clear. And that consensus is very solid. So we need to choose who we're going to trust. And I think that most of your listeners would trust the rigor and the credibility of these global institutions over, you know, the ad campaign from a gas company.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Chris Cooper, co-founder of Research and Action, which is part of the Climate Action Against Disinformation Global Coalition. Chris, we mentioned the declaration by 12 nations. One of those nations wasn't Australia. Did that surprise you?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, I think there's a few reasons. One, there's still time. I mean, COP runs till the end of next week. And so I expect more countries will sign on. I also would accept that there is the Senate hearing at the moment. We have a domestic national process happening around this issue at the same time. So it would make sense to conclude that before signing international agreements. But we have seen that successive governments in Australia continue to fail to address some of the roots of this problem. And to be fair, it's big and it's difficult to tackle. So there's problems in news media, there's problems of truth in advertising, there's problems, of course, with social media. So it is a tricky problem, but we've also seen a real lack of ambition and motivation from Australian governments to actually take action to tackle any of this.
The declaration is presented as a significant breakthrough, those sorts of things. If you dig down a little bit more, it seems like the funding associated with it is pretty limited. Basically, it looked to me like only $1 million from Brazil so far. Is there institutional and financial backing for this initiative?
Well, not yet. And I do think that it's a start. I mean, I think there's something sort of unjust in the fact that Brazil has been the sole financial contributor, as far as I know, to this initiative. But I think, you know, establishing the agreements around this is an important step towards more funding. But this is a problem that has sat in the hands of civil society and, you know, small organizations, researchers, journalists, all of whom are underfunded to take on the massive effort of tackling the disinformation from the fossil fuel industry. And so it is a problem. But I do think this is a positive sign and a step towards more resourcing, more support, more credibility behind the need to tackle this.
Has AI accelerated disinformation in the climate space, Chris?
I think it would be difficult to say it hasn't. The use of AI is making it easier for, you know, well-resourced actors to create and disseminate and target disinformation. And so certainly it's already happening. The scale of which I don't think we have a clear picture on yet, but we have seen one of the anti-renewable groups who submitted a submission to the Senate inquiry get caught out because they used AI to write their submission and it made up a wind farm and it cited references that didn't exist. So it's happening and it's influencing it, but I think we're yet to see how bad it's going to be.
Returning to the Senate inquiry, what's the timeline for the inquiry from here?
I think the report is due at the start of next year, although it may be earlier. And we hope there'll be a set of strong recommendations that come out of that. It's been one of the most unhinged and fiery inquiries that I've seen in terms of the hearings anyway. And that's in part because the witnesses that were called were from across the spectrum. There were climate denialists and there were climate advocates and activists as well. And so it set the scene for one of the more interesting Senate hearings, I'd say.
Well, after that description of unhinged and fiery, I think I might be logging on to the parliamentary website to take a look. It sounds like it was good viewing. But Chris Cooper, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra today.
Thanks for having me.
And Chris is the co-founder of Research in Action, which is a member of the global coalition Climate Action Against Disinformation. And as we heard, the COP30 conference continues in Brazil for quite a few more days yet. It finishes on the 21st of November.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.